and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are so glad that you decided to return after last week's disastrous episode. Can you believe those fools? All of that yammering about Twin Peaks and no conclusions reached. MabCon 2017 is still really cool. In today's episode, we will follow two of our hosts, myself, Eric L. Arneson, and Matthew Anthony, as they attempt to brew a beer. The recording conditions for this episode were tricky, and it's very possible that one of our hosts, the host in charge of the audio recording equipment, hadn't calibrated everything quite right. So hopefully you will excuse us if from time to time your hosts sound like strange robots, or aliens from another dimension, or time-traveling Morlocks. We will attempt to remove the background noise and enhance the audio signal as much as possible so that you can gain from their wisdom. So please, ladies and gentlemen, sit back and enjoy the show.
Down!
Right, so there's this legend that is inscribed on the walls of some of the pharaoh's tombs. I think in particular, like Seti the First and Ramses the Second and Third, I think. And this legend was so important to these guys that they had like a whole room set aside. So you'd like go into their tomb, and you know their tombs were like sort of vast and sprawling. And they'd have a whole room set aside just for this legend where it was like carved and painted on the walls. And we call it now the Book of the Heavenly Cow. Do you know this story?
No.
All right. So the Book of the Heavenly Cow tells how Ra, the king of the gods, was super pissed off at mankind. He's like, mankind sucks. I'm really pissed off. And so he goes to Hathor. Hathor, who's this loving goddess, you know, she's the goddess of like falling in love and being all like nice and mushy and friendly and stuff. She is the golden one. And he says to Hathor, he's like, Hathor, I'm going to use my super god powers. I'm going to turn you into a wrathful goddess. And I want you to go down and punish mankind for being a bucket of dicks. And Hathor's like, okay. So Ra transforms Hathor into Sekhmet. Sekhmet is another sun goddess, but she's associated with war, and like her typical depiction is a woman with like a lioness for a head, and she also has like a sun disc on her head and stuff. So Sekhmet goes down to the world and just starts murdering the hell out of men, just killing him left and right, killing, and she's like the most efficient, bloodiest, vicious, like, efficient killing machine ever created. And Ra looks down and watches Sekhmet, and he's like, oh, whoops, crap, what did I do? I just took, like, the most loving creature ever, you know, the goddess of love, and transformed her into this vicious murder monster and sent her down to do bad stuff to people and chop them into pieces and all this sort of thing. And he's like, How can I stop her? She's bloodthirsty. I can't get through to her. I can't communicate to her and bring out like the nice, kind Hathor that exists within. It's like Sekhmet all the way. So finally he comes up with an idea. And he gathers up all the beer he can find. And he makes this lake of... He puts it all in one big lake. He makes a big lake of beer. And then he dyes it red so it looks like a lake of blood. And then he lures Sekhmet there. And Sekhmet is so bloodthirsty that she's just all like, blood! And she dives in and she drinks and she drinks and she drinks. And she drinks the entire lake of beer and gets ridiculously drunk and passes out. And when she wakes up, the divine hangover has transformed Sekhmet back into Hathor. And that's the Book of the Holy Cow, or the Heavenly Cow, the Book of the Heavenly Cow. I'm not entirely certain what it means, but... Okay, Matt, what kind of beer are we making?
They're making a triple. I was going to say Belgian triple, but that's kind of redundant.
And what's going to be special about it? Like, what are the ingredients? What are the steps? I don't even know what questions to ask you.
I mean, triple, at least the triple that I like to make, is it's like super, super simple grain bill. It's pretty much just all Pilsner with like a pound of something else in there.
So like Pilsner malt?
Yes.
Okay.
And then Belgian candy sugar, but mm-hmm. in this case, we'll have to find some other form of sugar because we can find Belgian candy sugar.
And it's all grain?
Yes.
And it's 10 gallons? And you haven't named your mash paddle.
No, I've had that mash paddle for 11 years.
Well, it looks no more than like 2 years old. It's a very handsome mash paddle. So there's a... We have a really big bag of malted barley. I mean, you know, it was originally 55 pounds, and it probably looks like maybe it's got 35 pounds left in it.
It's 25 pounds.
25 pounds left in it. And there's a device with a lot of tubes going in and out of it called a Therminator.
It's a wort chiller.
It's a wort chiller.
Which was super not as important to have. It's a convenience here in Washington because the groundwater temps are always naturally low. But in Oklahoma, during the summertime, groundwater temps could be like high to mid-70s. So trying to get your beer cooled at the end of boil just was a nightmare. And so that's a plate chiller that helps speed up the process. So in Washington, it's an even faster knockout because the groundwater temps are so much lower.
This is a...
Lickman.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. I get it now. I get it now.
So you have, I mean, it's a one-stage wort chiller. Like in a brewery, up here a lot of breweries probably don't even have a two-stage chiller, I'm assuming, because, again, the groundwater temps. But one stage would just be you've got wort going in, and you also have water going in, and the water's between one plate, beer's mm-hmm. going through the other, and there's tons of plates.
Yeah.
But a two-stage chiller, you'd have water and glycol.
Okay.
Going through to really knock it down.
Right, but okay, so that's cool. So this doesn't use glycol, just cold water.
Just cold water.
Okay, so then the first step is this first keg, which has... Hey, can you hear me echo?
Echo.
So this one, yeah, I brew using converted kegs.
Okay, the one with the space blanket on the outside.
Yes. This...
This is the mash tun.
This is my mash tun.
Okay.
But I was telling you earlier, when I moved from Oklahoma, I actually had three vessels. I had an actual hot liquor tank. Mm-hmm. A third keg, I used a hot liquor. And I would brew the way you normally would. But when I moved from Oklahoma, I got rid of most of my stuff. So I got rid of my hot liquor tank, which means I have to brew kind of screwy now. This is only my second time to brew since leaving the brewery. And so I'm doing boil in a bag. And the last time I brewed back in the spring, it was a 5-gallon batch. And so things weren't as weird.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're doing a full 10-gallon batch and a boil in a bag, maybe it'd be interesting. So normally I'd have three vessels to work from, but in this case, the mash tun's going to act almost like a hot liquor tank.
Okay.
We'll put the bag in the kettle.
Okay, and what's in the bag?
The malt.
Okay, so... But...
So instead of doing a normal sparge like you would in a mash tun, you've got... Full volume of water for the most part in the kettle. The mesh bag goes in the kettle. You put your grain in there, and instead of sparging, you lift the bag out, grain and all.
Okay. All right. Cool.
And then you top off to get whatever volume you need to get to.
All right. Well, then, should we fill something up with water?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Ooh. This is Hitchhiker Land.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we just returned from the store. We got 2 pounds of sugar in the raw, which is a turbinado organic cane sugar. And Matt was explaining that he would have rather had Belgian candy sugar, but turbinado is pretty good. The sugar gets added to the boil further down the road. And I also learned some other stuff about brewing with Pilsner malts. Matt, when he was running his brewery, Pilsner malt was kind of his go-to, so he used it all the time. And Okay, so after we do the mash, then we do a boil. So after we pull the tea bag out of the boiling kettle, then we, I don't know if we top it off or not, but we basically boil then. The boiling process eliminates a bunch of funk that can produce off flavors. So there's a lot of weird off flavors that'll happen if you don't boil enough. And Pilsner malt really likes to be boiled. It's big on boiling. And, And that's all I've got. Except that I'm going to open a beer. Because in my experience, you don't homebrew without drinking. Yeah, okay. All right, we're going to open a Festivus. This is... Hey, get your nose out of there, dogs. Jeez, dogs. Dogs everywhere. What? Okay, we've had a number of really incredible developments. First of all, we opened a classic Anthem Festivus. What year is this from?
April or May of 2014, and it sat in bourbon barrels until November of 2014.
So it's almost 3 years old altogether.
Yes.
So, but does beer develop very much in the bottle?
Or is it it'll keep aging and changing.
And it's great. Like when I first poured it, it smelled like bourbon. And it smells like cake. It smells like
banana bread.
It does. Yeah. Like a spiced
like a boozy
cake.
Bourbon banana bread.
Mmm.
This is the holiday.
The holiday beer. I gotta say that this style of holiday beer, like the spicy, strong, figgy, dark style. This is like my favorite beer style. It's delicious, and I feel like this stuff is liquid gold.
I think it actually tastes better than the one I opened last year. The carbonation started to fall off.
Yeah. It is kind of flat, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't feel like you need it.
It's a big enough beer to wear.
And we had one of these last year, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other exciting development. So, Sor Sadkiel sent us a care package, and we were really hoping that it took forever. She mailed it on the... It took, 8 days? which is too bad, because we were really hoping to get it so that we could work through it. She sent us her Rototaro Internal Alchemy deck, which looks awesome. It's still in shrink wrap. Like, Matt just got it off the front porch. The mail guy just dropped it off. So we haven't actually opened it up to look at it. But this thing is... It's kind of about as big as two tarot decks sitting next to each other. In fact, I think it's exactly that big. It's huge. I'm really excited about breaking into this, so maybe we'll talk about it later on. And then she also... she's been working on the Minor Arcana in the Rototaro. And she got a couple of test decks back from the printer, and they screwed up. So she sent us some reject decks, which I'm really excited about, because one thing that I've always wanted to experiment with is using tarot. Matt, what is that foamy bucket? Is that the sanitizer? Okay, cool. Brewing is kind of like mad science, which I think is really why Matt likes it.
It's really just washing dishes.
It's washing dishes with mad science. So I've been really excited about these reject decks, because there's still going to be plenty of usable cards in here, and I think they would be really cool for talismans or art projects or spell work using tarot. I've seen some people do this where they have spells or rituals where they offer up a tarot card as a sacrifice or like an offering, so they burn it or something. So, and I've always wanted to try that, but it's really hard to take a tarot deck that's all complete and whole and be like, I'm going to destroy you and make you unusable. But now these tarot decks are already unusable, so
So that's cool, right? You won't feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, so is that would have the misprint?
Or yeah, these have a misprint. No, these are whole. These are...
Oh, okay.
These are the these are the internal alchemy meditation courses.
Oh, so that their misprint was on that.
No. Oh, okay. These are whole. Like, she's been looking forward to sending us these. But this is a... And you can take that, and maybe it's still usable. One for each of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad that
did she say... I can't remember what it... I think she said what the issue was.
She said, I think that... some of the cards didn't pick up colors correctly or something of that nature. And I don't know which ones, but I think the only ones she's changed are minor arcana cards. So the major arcana might still be good in these. So yeah, and I think this is huge versions of the major. I don't know. We're going to have to open up one.
Either way,
see.
Thank you.
Yes, Sword. Thank you, Sword Sadkiel. You're an honorary bromancer.
Yes.
Now. And I'm super glad that the other... two guys are
my
still here.
My alchemical sismancer?
We'll figure that out later. But I'm excited. I'm really happy that Nate and Joey left, so we don't have to argue over who gets to keep these.
Chumps with your day jobs.
Yeah, man, day jobs. Well, here's to freelancing, huh? Okay, so now I'm sort of watching. We had to patch a hole in the tea bag. But are you taking pictures?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Show notes.
Yeah. We're gonna put some pictures in the show notes in case our descriptions aren't very good. So right now, if you see the picture where it looks like one of the brew kettles is wearing Sauron's crown, those are actually clamps holding the tea bag in. And we haven't poured the grains in yet, but there's a lot of steam coming off, so maybe we're like 4 minutes away. Is it even closer than that? Oh, right, because we're not boiling yet. We're just getting to 100, I think Matt said 164 degrees Fahrenheit. When you are mashing, what you're doing is taking so the barley's malted already. And that means it's sprouted, or...?
Yeah, it sort of sprouted. The main thing is what happens during the malting is you're activating the starches that are locked up in the grain.
Okay.
And in your... and I am out of it today. Basically, you're making it to where you can have an enzymatic reaction whenever the grain hits the water. Like, beta and alpha. Beta and alpha amylase to where...
Uh-huh.
The grain hits water at 128, 130, whatever the temp is.
Yeah.
It can actually convert the starch to sugar. Whereas if you just keep it, throw it in there without malting, it's just starch.
It's just starchy water. It's like when you make pasta. Oh, and Barley the Witch Dog is here. Barley, can you say hi? Do you want to bark once? Do you want to?
You're looking super cute, Barley.
How do you get... Does Barley have a speaking command? Barley, speak. Speak. Sneeze. Yawn and squeak. Okay, well, whatever. This is it. Okay, you guys. We're dumping grain. Okay. I want to get a recording of that sloshing noise. Okay, slosh.
No, I don't want to slosh too much.
We dumped all the grain in there. It smells... if you've brewed before, you know the smell of, like... wort and grains and all that stuff. And that's what it is right now. Ugh. So this is what you were talking about before. You were telling me that you wanted to account for the temperature of the grain, right? Mm-hmm. So you just basically throw it in at 164 and it cools off to the temperature you want it to be at?
Well, your strike temperature, uh-huh. That 164, that's the strike temp. That's going to change, like you said, based off of your recipe. Like, if you're wanting lighter-bodied, higher alcohol,
uh-huh.
You have a little lower target temperature you're shooting for, so your strike temperature is going to be a little lower. But you also have to factor in the temperature of the grain itself that's going to be going in, because that'll throw off your target. So,
cool.
In this case, based off of temperature of the grain, the temperature of everything outside, mm-hmm. and what I'm going for. I figured 164, or I worked backwards, calculated 164 should work.
Okay, but
this mash looks a little looser than what I normally like.
Uh-huh.
And I'm guessing we overshot.
So you'd normally like it to be thicker?
Just a little bit. Okay. Not a whole lot. Because if it's too loose, the enzymes, this is going to sound really dumb, have a hard time swimming everywhere they need to go.
Okay, that makes sense.
But if it's too thick, you're not going to get...
You're not going to get the conversion.
Extraction.
Yeah. Right. So you want them to... It's kind of like the perfect neighborhood density, right?
Yeah.
You want, okay, yeah.
The Goldilocks zone.
Right, the Goldilocks zone. Okay, that makes sense. Cool. So right now, it's kind of foamy on top, but it looks like sort of straw-colored porridge, I guess, would be a good way to say.
Soupy oatmeal.
Soupy oatmeal, yeah, but not the good. It's not an oatmeal-ish color. And that's the Pilsner malts, I guess, because they're pale.
We overshot, but only by 2 degrees.
What kind
so,
of
that's fine.
What kind of flavor difference might that make?
It won't make a flavor difference. It'll contribute to like more like the body and mouthfeel.
Okay.
Not mouthfeel, more the body. Like generally, like if you're looking for a higher alcohol, there's so many caveats in this, so I don't know if you
okay.
really like.
Cool, that's fine.
Like you say, if you wanted to make like a British style stout,
uh-huh.
you would have a higher mash tent.
Okay, so this
because you want to leave some more. You're wanting to leave some residual sugar behind to have it like a fuller body. Whereas if you were making, say, like a triple or a saison, you would have a lower strike temp because you want something that's going to thin out and dry
okay.
out.
So this might give a little bit more body to the triple mm-hmm. in the end. Okay, but maybe not noticeably.
No, because it's only off by... I was shooting for 151, which for most people bringing a triple, they're probably shooting for 149.
Uh-huh.
But I want a little more body anyway. I was shooting for 151.
And you got 153?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Great. Then maybe it'll be a noticeable amount of body.
Could be.
All right. And we only let this sit for 5 minutes.
15.
15 minutes.
It really, okay. because I don't think we got this recorded earlier. I was saying, and when you're taught homebrewing, I don't know if the dogmas are the same
uh-huh.
when you get in homebrewing now as they were when I started. But you're always told you have to rest the mash for 60 minutes if you want it to convert. That's because whenever people started homebrewing, grains weren't that modified to where you actually had to wait that long for you to get the conversion. But a mm-hmm. lot of money was put in by the malting companies to make really high malt-flotted grain malt. And most of them will tell you, you get most of your conversion within 5 minutes. But
cool.
just to be safe... Usually 15.
Okay.
So you don't have to wait the full 60. Some people argue, oh no, but I found on a commercial scale, 15 was best. And so.
Okay.
Even on
cool.
paper, it's the same.
Well, that's really neat. That kind of changes things, you know.
It shortens your brew day quite a bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, all grain brewing used to be, like, one of the hugest things used to be, like, oh yeah, you got to take 8 hours to brew a beer, six hours to brew a beer. But now you're saying.
Like we were like
we're gonna be ready to start boiling soon.
Yeah, because even when I started Anthem,
mm-hmm.
I was still doing 60-minute rest, and I talked to other friends with breweries, and they're like, "Oh no, man, 15 minutes—that's all you need." And I was a little dubious, but we did some experiments, and we had the same efficiency: 60 minutes versus 15. So like, I'm a chump. So we took our brew day between that and some other things we implemented, took it from a 7-hour brew day down to we could do a brew in 4 to 4.5 hours,
which gives you more free time
to do another batch.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's all about the volume.
It's all about the volume. Cool. Well, that's awesome. All right, so I guess we get to sit down now, huh? Do we have to stir more? I'm going to open the big... all right, this is Sword Sadkiel's internal alchemy deck. It looks like it has... I mean, it looks like it... It must have 30 cards in it. I thought that it was just your major arcana, but maybe it's got like an instruction card or something. It's huge! These are so cool! Okay. Oh, there are 2 cards for each key. So, like, the Fool has this huge Fool card, which there are instructions. I'll read the instructions. Okay.
Instructions on the back of each.
No, so it's got...
Oh, I thought that was... Never mind.
It has the Okay, so each of the cards, each of the keys, the 22 keys has a blown up version of the card. So it's got like the Fool, Giant, the normal Rototaro backing on the back, and then the second card is the description of the key, Key Zero, the Fool. So it has all of the stuff, the same that you'd find in the Rototaro booklet about what the card is about. Along with an affirmation down at the bottom. For this Fool, it says, "The scintillating intelligence is my true self. I am one with the eternal flames of spirit, which is the truth underlying all experiences." Okay, so instructions for operation. Things you will need. 1. An altar in a quiet, clean space where you will not be disturbed. 2. A chair or meditation cushion. I usually just use my butt as a meditation cushion. 3. A timer.
You're lucky enough to have a butt.
Four, a piano app or a master key 13-note pitch pipe for chanting in specific tones. Okay, that makes sense. And then 5. A journal or pen for recording your experience. So, let's see. You sit at your altar and begin alternate nostril breathing, like the pranayama breathing, I would assume, for 5 minutes while looking at the specific card. There's a lot of extra instructions on how to do the breathing, how to sit properly to keep your energy moving correctly. 2. Once you have completed the breathing, review the correspondences while contemplating the symbolism in the key at hand. 3. While looking at the key, read the affirmation out loud 3 times in the musical note that it corresponds with, pausing from 30 seconds to a minute after each repetition. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. 4. After you've chanted the affirmation, go to the invocation, which is on the opposite side of the affirmation, like I said before. Read it out loud in your normal voice with focus so that you may grasp the meaning as much as possible. After you complete the reading of the invocation, look at the tarot key for another 5 minutes. Be sure to take deep, long, slow, rhythmic inhalations and exhalations. Internally ask about the symbols. And then at the end, you write down your insights along with the date and the key that you're working with. And then finally, not finally, penultimately, close the space with a spontaneous prayer of gratitude. And then sit for a minute or so breathing deeply before continuing with your daily affairs. And record any synchronicities throughout the day. This looks like a pretty solid tarot meditation practice. It really makes me think of, like, you know, when I was first doing modern magic, like, there's this whole tarot meditation thing in there that's not nearly as detailed and interesting. So, this is cool. Good job, Sword Sonkis.
I'm excited to get started on it.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to, like, we'll have to compare notes.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. So, did you look through the deck?
Yes.
Does it look good?
Yeah, looks great. But I understand.
Yeah.
There's probably details that she knows about that you don't know about.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe if we compared it to the other printing, we'd be like, oh, look.
Don't you have
this? Yeah, in fact, I brought mine with me. But I've also been paying attention. Oh, look at that. And then at the back, there's like little charts. The Tree of Life. The Tarot. The Hebrew alphabet using the same colors that she uses for the keys. And then the cube of space. This is so cool! And this thing, look, a little mini chart for the Tree of Life. That's going to be really helpful, actually, for me. This is all really beautiful. Sword Zonkiel definitely knows her shit.
Super impressed.
Yeah, me too. I need... thing to keep this in. Do you have like an extra paper bag or something that I can
I can find you something smaller. I think okay. I actually do have something smaller.
Okay. Do you have a space in your house that you use for ritual?
Not in this house. In Puyallup I did.
Well, I remember
I had a dedicated space. Right now it just have to be my office, which I don't like having. What I loved in
y'all because
yeah, you had a whole separate room.
Space.
Yeah,
because I don't like merging those two. Because work can get very stressful, and I don't necessarily like having that energy.
Yeah,
but I don't really have a choice here.
Yeah, I mean, I have my my ritual spaces in my working room, but they're on opposite walls.
Yeah.
So I have like one wall is all altar, and the other wall is like all work stuff.
Yeah. The main work I do is in my office. Yeah. But I don't feel like it's my space, I guess, but I don't really consider it.
Yeah.
Because even in my house from the city, I use our guest bedroom for my ritual space.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to get dedicated space.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm really lucky living in Portland that I have two bedrooms that I get to deal with because I'm a poor freelancer, so I feel really, really gracious, grateful for that.
I'd love to build a little. We've been talking about putting a yurt or a TV in our backyard.
Uh huh.
Just as like either a second office or uh-huh. just. Moving my office up there, just having interesting space.
Uh-huh.
If we did that, I'd probably think that. Especially being outside.
Yeah.
That would key in more.
Like, have that be your ritual space and keep your office in the house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or vice versa.
That'd be cool, especially since you've been doing since you've been having such, like, a spiritual connection to nature.
Sure, yeah.
Day. Having an outdoor ritual space would be awesome.
Yeah.
Imagine
I don't know the guy's name. Person left a comment that suggested a Celtic Golden Dawn work for
me. Let me find out. You want
to super grateful
see?
To that person.
Okay, hold on.
Something I just learned about Eric.
We should absolutely respond to our commenters
yes.
in the podcast because that's what podcasters do. Okay, Dean Smith.
Thank you, Dean Smith.
Yeah, he responded to our interview with Chuck Dunning, which I think still is maybe my favorite episode ever. Like, talking to Chuck was so cool.
For me, it's that tied with
Sword Sadkiel. Yeah, they were both pretty awesome. And Dean wrote, "Hey, I'm really enjoying your guys' podcast. I love beer and am a Freemason. This is not a Masonic podcast, Dean, so, cool your jets. And practice magic, so this is really awesome. One of you guys mentioned that nature and the Golden Dawn inspires him. That would be Matt. Matt mentioned that. John Michael Greer wrote a book called Celtic Golden Dawn, and it is a fusion of revival druidry and Golden Dawn. He also founded an order, the Druidical Order of the Golden Dawn, which uses the book as a textbook. Think instead of Egyptian Christian symbolism, nature slash Welsh mythological symbolism. Anyway, again, great podcast. I'm trying to catch up on all of them." Yeah, thanks, Dean.
Yeah.
Like that's really
huge
cool.
Thanks. Yeah,
yeah.
That's gonna send me down a really exciting rabbit hole.
Yeah, and it's always a real delight to hear from people we don't know that they're enjoying our podcast. You know, I mean, when your friends are like, "Hey, your podcast is super cool," you're like, "Yeah, you're just saying that because you're a friend." so thank you, and. And yeah, did you look the book up?
No, because you just told me about it Saturday afternoon while we were at a conference.
So. Oh, yeah. I feel like I heard of that book before, but it didn't occur to me. But yeah, like that's totally right up Matt's alley.
Oh, Barley's too, apparently.
Yeah. I'm really glad that your dogs are my friends now.
I am too. Be a lot less barking.
I know, they didn't even bark at me all the last time.
Except she'll forget you by the time you come back.
Yeah, but maybe not for long. Right, Zoe? We're surrounded by dogs here all the time. Next time I bring Benadryl.
So weird as you said that. Uh-huh. I just got a text from Amy saying she gave Barley Benadryl. Literally, I'm reading that as you said Benadryl.
Oh, why would you give Barley Benadryl?
Because he's having some itching issues.
Oh.
Dogs handle Benadryl really well.
That's funny.
Or better than they told him.
Cats are bad. I mean, they handle Benadryl if you can get it past their mouth.
Oh.
But if it touches anything in their mouth, they foam up.
Oh.
Like crazy. Just sort of like
Griffin did earlier.
Like Griffin did earlier. Yeah, that's immediately what it made me think of. Gotta give Barley a Benadryl! Oh, I want to smell. Does it smell any different?
It should smell the same. So now that Eric's gone, I'm totally going to judge him for having not ordered a slice of cherry pie when we were at the Double R in North Bend yesterday while I was giving Joey, Nate, and him a tour of all the Twin Peaks sites. Super disappointed in Merritt for not going through with a slice of cherry pie.
Hymns and prayers to Hathor. May I pray to her for the greatness of her name, for the strength of her striking power. Love of her is in the hearts of the people. Her beauty is with the gods. The Ennead shall come to her, bowing down for the greatness of her eminence. I shall laud the Golden One, extol her majesty. I shall exalt the Mistress of Heaven, give homage to Hathor. Thanks to my lady. O perfect, O luminous, O venerable, O great sorceress, O luminous mistress, O gold of the gods. And then in the afterlife, I have come before you, O lady of the two lands, Hathor, great of love. I kiss the ground for your Ka. I was your true servant, loyal to your command. I did not spurn the words of your mouth. I was not ignorant of your teaching. I was upon the path which you yourself set, upon the road which you made. Okay, so we started the boil, and we just pitched the hops. And it was, what is that, 1 ounce?
Uh-huh.
1 ounce of Hallertau. And it was incredible. Like, so Matt's been over here, like, skimming proteins and things off the top of the brew, and it's all boily and great. And you dump the hops in, and it immediately, like, green foam starts to form, and, like, the smell starts to change, and, like, it's pretty exciting. And how long do we boil it?
60 minutes.
You're going to boil it for 60 minutes. Is there always constantly a threat of a boil over? Do we have to hover over it for 60 minutes?
No, I mean, most part, it's, like, the main concern is the first 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
Or any time you do a hop addition, there's a chance of a boil over. But generally, it's just that first, because you've got the highest volume of wort in the vessel.
Uh-huh.
And you've got to let hop break, and so that's your biggest risk of boil overs at the beginning. There's always a chance later on, but for the most part, after the first 10 minutes, you can just kind of walk away a bit.
Okay. I can't believe how good this smells. So the pellets, when they get in there, they start to break up pretty fast, huh? Like, you can see plant matter, like, swirling around in there now. And especially in the foam on the top. And then you were telling me earlier, and I guess this is kind of common knowledge for home brewing, but when you sort of add your bittering hops at the beginning of the boil, because it takes that long for all the alpha acids and stuff to sort of convert and...
Yeah, just come out.
Hopify?
Yeah.
Then come out? Okay. And then at the end we'll be adding Zatz.
Mm-hmm.
Zatz.
Yeah.
Which is
Czech... for flavor and aroma, not for bitterness.
Okay. Right. And we got 2 ounces of that, though.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Okay, and we're adding both ounces?
Uh-huh.
Cool. Okay. Cool. Hmm. I wish this thing recorded smells. We are almost done with the boil. We took a break and ate some lunch. Matt is busy sanitizing connectors and tubes and pump inlets and outlets. Are these corny kegs? Are these kind of corny kegs? Yeah. So the two corny kegs, each corny keg is about 5 gallons. They are sitting here oozing sanitizer. And it looks like we've probably... That's like maybe 3 inches down, so maybe like we've maybe boiled off a gallon and a half, almost 2 gallons of stuff there. Almost like
two and a half.
Yeah, 2.5 gallons. It still smells incredible. Everything looks really good. So the thermometer isn't electronic. It's just a...
But I have a pump.
The pump is electronic.
Yeah.
Okay. This is really exciting. I'm very excited about this. So now we're mixing liquids and electricity. This is where things get interesting. And Matt's mentioned a couple times that he might add some fruit to one of the fermenters, one of the kegs for fermentation. So he's doing actually, the fermentation is happening in the keg. And then after that, I don't know what the next step is. I don't know if he's going to do a secondary fermentation or if he's going to bottle straight from the keg, or if he's going to be able to serve straight from the keg, that's, we're just going to have to wait and see. It's going to be a few weeks. Probably right when this episode is released will be the time when the beer is ready. Okay, and then the hydrometer, you said we have to wait until it's cool enough to pitch. Or even after. But at least...
I mean, just as it's... I mean, it'll be cool enough once it's going through the...
Terminator.
Barley, stay away from there.
Okay, I'm going to review Nutter Butters now. Alright, Internet, I'm opening a pack of Nutter Butter Bites. The Peanut Butter Lovers Cookie. This is a, it smells like fake peanuts. I think that's real peanuts, a lot of sugar, some vanilla, other unidentifiable smells, kind of some molasses-y things maybe going on in there.
It's got a really good crunch.
They're kind of sweet and a little tangy. Classic Nutter Butter flavor. It's sort of like the platonic ideal of peanut butter. You know, like if you're like, oh, the perfect peanut butter created in a lab would taste exactly like this. That's really what you're getting here. There's really nothing surprising in the list of ingredients. It's not like they're adding a bunch of weird-ass chemicals. It's all normal chemicals. Nutter butter. Also, the name sounds kind of like a porn. So Matt is currently attaching... He's pulling all this stuff out of the sanitizing solution, attaching all the hoses and tubes and pumps and connectors to things. He's got the Therminator almost all hooked up. The brew kettle has a tube coming out of the front, which goes into the pump, which goes into the Therminator on one side. On the other side of the Therminator... is the hose, just the cold water hose. So what happens is the cold water runs in one direction through the Therminator, and there's a barrier between the cold water and the hot wort. And the hot wort runs in the other direction through the Therminator. So heat exchanges between the two. The cold water gets hot, while the hot wort gets cold. So the cool thing about the Therminator is it looks like it's some sort of little electronic device, but there's no electricity at all. It's just basically sheets of metal with liquid running between them. It's pretty ingenious. And I was setting it up so that the garden hose comes in one side, and then it's just going to spit out into the yard on the other side. Whereas the wort comes in one side, exits the other side, and will go into a keg. How's it looking? Ooh. Can I do one?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we just pitched the Czech Zatz, which is our finishing hop. So that's the hop that's done for flavor. And we used two bags of that. And I sprinkled a little bit of the hop dust into my beer, just like the last time. That's not also, by the way, a very good idea. Because a little bit of hops goes a long ways, which is why you only, like this whole 10-gallon batch, we're only using 3 ounces of hops. And even then, like the solids of the hops don't make it into the beer at all. It's really just kind of like the oils that get steeped out of it, sort of in a tea kind of way, you know? All right, the hydrometer is in the graduated cylinder. Ew, it's all foamy and weird in there. We've started the cooling water, and now it's time to... Oh, this is exciting. All right, so we whirlpooled, or Matt whirlpooled, which makes all the hot sediment settle in the middle. And now, I don't know what happens next. He's turning off
the cold water. Okay, we're using Imperial Organic Yeast. They're these little 5-ounce cans from Portland, and it's B63 Monastic. Can we just leave it for a while?
Yep.
All right. Okay, we filled the hydrometer, we turned on the pump. After the head and the hydrometer dies down a little bit, we'll let it get a accurate original gravity count. It's kind of squirting a little bit. It's one of the rules of ruin. Everything is sticky and or wet. I'm recording for real this time. The theme to this entire episode seems to be Eric continues to forget to record. So we're done with the brew. Matt's cleaning the brew kettle, and I'm looking at the hydrometer, which is reading about 1060, maybe a little over 1060. It's hard to tell. There's so little foam, which is a little low because we were aiming for 1090. And I'm sure Matt has some thoughts as to what could have been what he could do next time to get more out of it. But what we're going to end up with is probably a session triple, which is a new style that Matt's invented, the session triple, for responsible monks, for monks who have to work in the morning. So thanks for listening to us brew, and come back next time when we drink it.
Bye.
Yahtzee. I'm not going to be able to do that.